and very grateful to have on the Hooters Hotline, Hooters the original wing joint since 1983, a true historian of the game, as well as a notable writer covering the Kansas City Chiefs for 30-plus years and Kansas City's representative in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Bob Gretz joins us tonight. Bob, thank you for joining us here on 98.7 The Fan.
It's my pleasure, Steve.
I appreciate you taking the time on a Friday here. Bob, you know, obviously we're on the bye week here as Buccaneers fans here in Tampa, so we've got our eyes on Baltimore and the Chiefs this weekend as a game that we want to analyze, and that's why I was hoping to talk to you. You know, from what I've been seeing, there's a lot of talk around about Matt Cassel, and how serious is the hot seat under Matt Cassel, and how likely do you think a move to Brady Quinn might be either this weekend or next weekend against the Buccaneers?
That's hard to tell, because it is hard to tell who's going to make that decision. Normally that would be what a head coach would do, but we don't exactly have a very straight line of power in the building at Arrowhead these days, because Scott Pioli is the emperor, the man in charge of everything, and Matt Cassel is his boy. I mean, they are tied at the hip, and the last thing that he wants to see is Matt Cassel out of the lineup. So whether or not Romeo was kind of talking out of his hat, and whether he would really go ahead and do it, and whether he would have permission to do it, is all just part of the soap opera that the Chiefs have become here in the last year and a half or so. So the seat is hot. If it was up to the fans, the eject button would have been hit already. But it really doesn't make any difference, because Brady Quinn isn't going to come in and turn off and light up the field. They have no quality quarterback. Ricky Stanzi is their number three. And, you know, Ricky can barely walk as far as an NFL quarterback is concerned. So it's the situation they knew they were going to have. And really, Pioli did not do a darn thing about it.
And I'm glad that you answered it that way, because I was going to ask you what the general fan consensus was, which, you know, if they want Cassel out, as you said, there's not much behind him, which is never a pretty situation.
No, that's for sure. I mean, it's always the question, no matter who, you know, manager, coach, quarterback, whoever. Okay, go ahead, you're going to fire him, but who's going to replace him? And, you know, the pickings are slim here.
Jamaal Charles, obviously he's come back incredibly well this year, leading the AFC in rushing. Shelton Quarles, the Buccaneers, former great middle linebacker, and now a personnel executive, said that of the running backs that he's scouted this season, Charles is the fastest that he's seen. So I want to ask you, does Charles look to you like the Charles of old, pre-injury, and does he look to have that explosiveness that you're seeing?
He does. Of the three, you know, they had three major players who all went down with torn left ACLs in succeeding weeks, 1, 2, 3. Of those three, Eric Berry and Tony Milwaukee are the others. Charles is the guy who's come back the closest to 100%. And when he gets it, you know, he all of a sudden popped up with a couple fumbles last week. But like most of the players on the Chiefs, he's pressing. He's trying to make a big play every time he runs with the ball. The thing about Charles is he can make a big play every time he runs with the ball. And he looks fine. He looks fantastic.
We're talking to longtime Chiefs beat writer Bob Gretz and Kansas City's representative in the Pro Football Hall of Fame here on 98.7 The Fan. Bob, the Chiefs' secondary, from what I'm reading, is a major weakness. Obviously, Bucs fans knew Sabby Piscitelli was out there last year, and it seems like the Chiefs evaluated him the way the Buccaneers did, so he's not back this season. They had some losses in the secondary. Is it just that they haven't recovered, or what are you seeing there?
Well, they have been hurt by some injuries. They lost their best defensive back in Brandon Carr in free agency. They did not make an attempt, really, to re-sign him. And he went down to Dallas and got $50 million of Jerry Jones's money. So good for Brandon. About $10 million a year is how it worked out. But they've replaced him with Stanford Rout. And he's, you know, he's better than average, but that's a step down for them. Brandon Flowers, their other corner, has been hurt. He has a foot injury that just will not go away. It's bothered him again this week. He suffered the injury on July 31st, so you can see that he's been dealing with it for a long time. Eric Berry coming back off the knee. The free safety Kendrick Lewis blew out his shoulder in the second preseason game and has yet to get back on the field for a game. So they don't have a lot of depth, as most teams don't, and it's been a problem. And it'll be a problem on Sunday because Flacco and the way they're throwing the ball, they got a lot of weapons to hit, and the Chiefs are going to have a hard time handling them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Got a little bit of a curveball question here for you, and it may not be, but you know, Buccaneers quarterback Josh Freeman is a Kansas City area guy.
Yes.
And he stayed home and went to Kansas State. And, you know, I've noticed as a very astute follower of the Bucs and also a guy who spent a lot of years myself as a sports writer for the Tampa Tribune, I've noticed that there really haven't been really many or any local stories in Kansas City about Josh Freeman and his career. And, you know, sometimes the local paper will sort of keep an eye on the local guy. Was he not a very popular high school or college player there? Or is there anything to that, that he's just doesn't seem to be on the radar of folks from his hometown?
That has more to do, Steve, with the state of newspapers today. You know, I think that the Kansas City Star, which at one time had just a whole collection of some of the best writers in the country, I think they now have 7 sports writers for a major metropolitan newspaper. They're just,
wow.
It's not, you know, it's a dying newspaper, and like many, many other newspapers in this country, and they can barely get the scores in the morning, let alone do, I'm sure, believe me, next week there'll be a story or two about Josh Freeman. Everybody in Kansas City would have nothing but good things to say about Josh Freeman, from his time in high school to his time at Kansas State. And in fact, I guarantee you, there's a whole lot of Chiefs fans that wish he was wearing a red and gold uniform.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's come under a little bit of a hot seat here with his play, not really bouncing back from last season, and there's a lot of speculation that with next year being the last year of his contract and him not being Greg Schiano's quarterback, that they might look to move on if Freeman doesn't perform this year. So maybe that could happen, but you know, of course, we're not pulling for that by any means.
Well, I tell you what, he is much like a lot of young quarterbacks in this league. He got thrown in the fire, and it takes time. It takes time to reach a level where you can be consistent and do more than just manage a game, but help your team win. And I think Josh Freeman has the skills. It's just going to take a little bit of patience. And, hey, coaches, organizations, the Glazers, the Bucks fans are just like any others. They're not patient enough.
No, it doesn't seem to exist anymore in the modern NFL. Maybe that's good, but you know, I think ultimately, obviously, for player development, it's not a good thing. We're talking to you, longtime Chiefs beat writer Bob Gretz, here on the Hooters Hotline on 98.7 The Fan. You know, as long as we're talking the way that things used to be a little bit, or the changes in the NFL, you know, I'd definitely want to tap into your vast knowledge and of NFL history and talk a little bit of Hall of Fame. One thing that I, you know, personally was able to experience, because I was living in San Francisco at the time when Joe Montana went to Kansas City. And, you know, I think the average fan doesn't realize the impact that he had there. And they think of Montana and they think of, oh, well, he just played out the string in Kansas City. And I remember being in San Francisco where it was a big deal because stations were bidding for the Chiefs radio rights in San Francisco so people could listen to Montana play football back in 93. And I was able to do some work related to him being with the Chiefs. But I was hoping maybe you could just, you know, give the listeners just an idea of exactly what the energy and the accomplishments of Montana were back in 93 for that season, when a lot of people don't even really remember that he led them to the AFC title game. You know, what was that whole environment like?
Well, it was a pretty amazing 2-year run that Montana had. He was obviously not the Joe Montana of the Super Bowl 49ers, but he was a difference maker, even with a body that was failing him at times, and at an advanced stage. But he was a difference maker, and the excitement that he brought, I mean, quite frankly, it would be like if all of a sudden Tom Brady would happen to be traded to the Tampa Bay Bucks. And overall excitement, and when he was in training camp, they trained in Wisconsin at that time, and that's really where the fans got their first chance to see him in a Chiefs uniform. And I don't think of, you know, I think I've been to 35 or 36 training camps in my life, never seen one like it because of Joe. When he would go out with his fellow quarterbacks after practice and have a beer at the bar, as soon as he turned his back, people were stealing the beer cans because Joe had drank from it. And it was quite a change in what Kansas City was used to. And his performance, he did exactly what they wanted him to do. Got them in the AFC Championship game. And if he had not had a concussion on, I think, the third play of the second half, heaven knows what might have happened.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just a really interesting season. Hopefully the NFL Network will get a hold of that one year and, you know, look at Montana's first year with the Chiefs. And yeah, I think a lot of people forget that that team was a fantastic team and had many strong years. He was there and had a lot of pressure on him to win instantly. He was there for one reason, and he really got it done. I appreciate your perspective there. I definitely want to hit you on the Hall of Fame. You know, it's a big topic here in Tampa with Warren Sapp and John Lynch on the list this year, and hopefully, you know, being on the final list for voting. Now, there's obviously a lot of issues surrounding Warren Sapp. Are you getting any kind of mood or vibe that the voters will hold some of his personality issues and interaction-related issues against him?
Well, I can give you the politically correct answer the Hall of Fame wants to give, which is these decisions are made strictly by what a player does on the field. And then I can give you the truth, which is that kind of stuff, yeah, it affects some guys. It depends on the voter how he approaches the subject. And some guys cannot put away their thoughts or feelings on off-field behavior or the incident with Clifton with the Packers.
Sure.
And that's going to be a factor. But he is certainly very, very worthy of Hall of Fame consideration. But I would hesitate. I've been in that room for 17 years now, and I don't know sometimes how we come about the group that we vote in. And I would hesitate to even begin to say that he's a definite or he'll be a second year or whatever. He'll get in, but whether it's on the timetable that everybody wants, that usually doesn't happen.
We're talking to a Hall of Fame voter and longtime Kansas City Chiefs beat writer Bob Gretz here on 98.7 The Fan. Last question for you, Bob, on the Hall of Fame here. John Lynch, do you think the NFL's new focus on head injuries and legal hits and changing the way the game is played will affect a guy like Lynch, who really made his mark with playing a style of play that could never fly in today's game?
I don't think that will have any effect on his chances of making the Hall of Fame at all. I think that that's what he did, and he wasn't the only one. And the Hall of Fame has a few safeties who played that way. And the problem, of course, it really is there's such a backlog these days of getting into the Hall of Fame of guys not only in the secondary but wide receivers. It's so hard today to judge the difference between a great receiver and just a good one, because the numbers have not yet settled out. And so that's why each year, I know it frustrates fans when they see that, you know, another year where Chris Carter and Andre Reed and who else? So Tim Brown and there's somebody else I'm forgetting. they don't make it. And that's largely because, you know, we're not quite sure, as football has gone through the last few years, what constitutes a great receiver. Is it the numbers? I mean, it's always the catches and how important those catches are, but how to judge the numbers becomes a problem, and that translates over to the defense as well. And that's the secondary guys are sometimes having a problem because they're forced to play in a league that is throwing the football like never before. And that requires much different things from them and often leaves them, you know, looking like they may not be an ordinary player when they could be a heck of a player. So I think both John Lynch and Warren Sapp will get heavy consideration. There ain't any doubt in my mind about that because they're worthy of that. But whether they get in or how long they'd have to wait, like I said, I can't even begin to predict that.
Yeah, thanks so much, Bob, for the fabulous insight here on 98.7 The Fan. We appreciate you taking the time on a late on a Friday night here. A man of your status, it's very much appreciated.
No problem. Nice talking to you, Steve.
Thanks. Bob Gretz, longtime Kansas City beat writer, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. Really interesting stuff there, talking about receivers and what it takes to get in the Hall of Fame and how that all changes. And